combination of French and English. It's Réseau IP Européen, excuse my French, which basically says, if you look at the yellow part in this image, you'll notice that our idea of Europe is worse than Eurovision. We've got everything that used to be Soviet Union, we've got the Middle East in there, some quite interesting countries. Is that each of these regions has different policies for IP addresses. So, for instance, if you want to get IPv6, but you don't want to become a member of the RIPNCC in this case, then tough luck, there's no policy for that yet. However, there probably will be one soon. And in the different regions, people have different policies. All the other regions already have an IPv6 PI policy, just not our region. The RIPNCC does not make the rules, we only enforce them. If you want to change the rules, you can. But more on that later. Now, what do these five companies do? Well, for the most part, they hand out addresses. That is one of the most important things. There's IANA, which gets basically all the address space from the people in the IETF that make the standards. They give large blocks to us. We give still large blocks to our members. By the way, how many of you are a member of the RIPNCC? Oh, most of you. Well, then you know this bit. And you then start using addresses. The nice thing is the part where there, which says LAR, which is basically a member of the RIPNCC, that's what you can use for announcing in the BGP. Why is that important? Well, we've got the Internet Registry System, right? Which is actually this. All the people in there are part of the Internet Registry System. It's based on three things. One of them is easy. That's the registration bit. Register who has which networks. Great. That's fairly easy. Then there's aggregation, meaning let's have people only announce one prefix if possible. You guys actually connect the wires and you have the routers, so you know that this is not really completely done. We try to do that as much as possible. But then there's the other bit, which is the conservation. And we try to use the addresses we have for as long as we can, which is somewhat problematic. Basically, it means we try to give people only what they need. But then if they need more, they're going to get a second prefix, which is a problem with the aggregation again. So those two goals conflict, and that's why we have the policies. And the people that actually work with the machines and that connect everything, they're the ones that set the policy, meaning you. Now, onto conservation. It's been mentioned before. The Pac-Man of address space, there was 25% a few years ago. Right now, we're at 13%, and pretty soon, we're going to hit the wall. Right, so what are we going to do when we run out? It's anyone's guess. How many of you have got IPv6 already? Okay, that's a few. That's pretty good. It's a good portion, actually, of the people in Poland that already have an IPv6 allocation. Once we run out of addresses, there will be a few companies probably that might be able to sell you addresses, possibly. We don't know yet. Maybe they don't want to, or maybe they want a lot of money. We're working hard, amongst other things, with certification to make sure that if you want to get addresses from someone else, you can actually be sure that they have the right to do that. Because if you go up to someone and they go like, hey, want some IP addresses, lightly used, how do you know that they actually have the right to give you those addresses, and how do you know that they haven't done that already with someone else? We're trying to make sure that that doesn't happen. Then again, at the same time, if you care about continued growth, then really there's only one solution. Because even if you start doing NAT and get some addresses from other people, at some point you're going to run out, and then what? Now, the only solution, or, well, I don't know if it's a solution, maybe that's the wrong word, currently is IPv6. Now, when it comes to IPv6, not everyone likes it. There's the stages of grief. When I tell you we're going to run out of IPv4. You're going to have to change your network. You're going to have to add IPv6. Basically, these are the different stages of reactions that you'll get. You get the denial, and I've talked to many people that say, we've got NAT, you know, it's going to be fine. Who needs it? There's anger, and some people do get annoyed, and they go, like, stop talking about IPv6, we're not going to do that. There's the bargaining that goes like, well, you know, can't we just kind of set something up? Let's use the addresses in the E class and all that kind of stuff. You hear people talking about that. There's depression. Well, maybe you've already talked to some people, or maybe you're one of those people that go like, oh, IPv6. Probably the same way you felt this morning when you had to get up. It's like, oh, God. And then there's acceptance. There's a few people there, and they actually have IPv6. You've seen the hands. Maybe talk to them after today or during today about why they have the V6 and what they think of it. Deploying IPv6 today is, well, for some people it's fun, but it doesn't really help you much. At the same time, in a few years' time, and this is within the periods that you would normally plan with hardware, you're probably going to need it. So make sure that whatever you do now, you have that in your plans. Now, not everyone actually has that in the plans, because if you look at this, this is the number of allocations that we're giving out. And you can see that in the last year, it's shut up. It's really gone fast. Then again, we're roughly at 1,000 IPv6 allocations. We've got well over 6,000 members. So that means only 1 in 6 LARs has an IPv6 allocation. And currently in our region, if you want to do IPv6, you need to become an LAR, simply. So that's not really too good, only 1 in 6. And it gets actually worse if you look at the people that announced that allocation. That's the red line. About 50% of the people currently that have an IPv6 allocation actually announce that allocation in BGP. Of course, this has to do with the fact that most of the people that have an IPv6 allocation actually got it in, say, the last year or so. So they're testing stuff out. They're taking their time to set it up, and that's fine. It just is the case that the rate of announcement has actually gone down a bit. Now, even that is not that much of a problem, because IPv6 will really become an issue once you cannot get IPv4 anymore, which is in a few years. Right now, well, great. One of the things, though, that you want to think about is you might want to get IPv6. The more experience you get now, the easier it will be to actually put your customers on it. The idea is that the customers won't even notice they're on IPv6. Now, if you want to get an IPv6 allocation, it's actually fairly easy. It doesn't really influence the fee that you pay us. So currently, if you want to get an IPv6 allocation, you need to be an LAR. Now, most of you already are. Great, you've got that. Advertise the allocation as a single prefix. We're not saying you cannot announce smaller prefixes or more specifics, but you need to announce the big block. This is so that people can filter. A lot of people already have enough trouble as it is with their routers and the amount of prefixes that they have. IPv6 will simply add prefixes. So you might want to filter and keep it to a minimum. Well, as you've seen, for this region, you're roughly talking about 500 prefixes that are being announced anyways, so that's fine. Although, if you don't filter and you want to get the more specifics, you hit about 1,000 currently worldwide. So that's fine. And the last part is, have a plan for making assignments within 2 years. I planned yesterday to win the bowling. I didn't. And basically, it means plans can change. Now, however, if within 2 years you can set up a test network within your organization to do V6, and to announce this prefix, then you're there. You can get an IPv6 allocation, which is a /32. For those that don't know, /32 is a lot of addresses. Every subnet should be a /64, which is 4 billion times 4 billion addresses. You can give customers up to a /48, which is 65,000 subnets. By the way, if you have a customer that needs more than 65,000 subnets, that's fine too, but then you actually have to send in a request to the RIPE NCC, because, well, we'd like to know what kind of network that is. But up to 65,000 subnets you can just give to any customer, no questions asked, and you get /32, which is up to 65,000 of these networks that have 65,000 subnets and a lot of addresses in them. Of the three main pillars for the Internet Registry System, conservation doesn't really come into play with IPv6 currently. If you need more address space, you can get it. We've given a /19, which is 4,000 times a /32. Help me out, who's good with numbers? It's one of those things you should never do math in public. Anyway, you need the addresses, you can get them. Doesn't really influence the fee that you pay. They're there. Now, what do we think will happen? Well, we'll see. We have the internet. All of these networks, great, they're connected. One person starts doing IPv6. He thinks this is great, so he adds IPv6 to the network. Is basically talking to himself, starts talking to people and says, let's do v6. Other people say, cool, let's do that. Some others talk to them, they come to meetings, and this is the situation we're in now. Only a few networks have IPv6, and not all of them are connected directly. Some of them are through tunnels. IPv6 today will probably have some problems relative to IPv4. If you look at connectivity for IPv4 and then for v6, v6 basically doesn't give you the same thing. There's not a lot of content on v6. All of this is true. All of this makes IPv6 probably less interesting than it could be. At the same time, keep in mind it's the only solution we have for continued growth. So hopefully, at some point, this means that more and more people will start doing v6, and in the end, we'll have some kind of dual stacking where everyone has IPv4 and IPv6. Now, great, if it happens, we'll see. Will IPv4 disappear? Maybe, maybe not. Not for the foreseeable future anyways. Do you need to do v6 on every machine? Probably not, especially the management networks. You can probably keep that on v4. But it'd be a good idea to start doing v6. If only to say in a couple of years with customers that might ask for it, because when we run out of IPv4, there might be people that ask about it, you can say, we've got years of experience with IPv6, which probably sounds better than, yes, we have it too now. So, you know. What's the view here with IPv6? The ones that have IPv6, was it a problem to set up? How many had issues with setting up the v6 and getting stuff working? You had some issues? You stopped. So you don't have a working IPv6 setup currently. Okay. Wow. Okay. What would help? What would help you in getting your bosses to actually say, v6, we need to set this up, we need to test this, we need to know what it's about? Is there anything that we can do that would actually make your life easier in that regard? Because, you know, if stuff goes wrong, then right now, apparently, people pull the plug. They say, v6, let's stop doing that, it costs money, it messes stuff up, so let's stop doing this. At the same time, what we want, if you look towards the future, within 3 years we're going to run out of IPv4. So what do you do then? At that point, you either start doing more NAT. Well, if you do that, you need to rearrange your networks anyways. There are some solutions to try and get basically people on V6 to connect to V4 network. Other kinds of NAT, maybe you want to set that up instead, because then at least people will already be on V6. There's many options out there, but you actually need to do it. Now, a lot of you here probably don't mind doing V6, or actually would like to, because it's something new, you get to learn stuff. How do we convince people to actually let you do it? What do you need from us? If you don't know now, just let me know, otherwise during lunch or later today. Because basically the message is we need to do V6. Doesn't mean we need to stop doing V4. Right.
Hello? Okay. As a service provider, we from Global Cross, we were one of the first service providers who have implemented IPv6 in our network, you know. I'm from the pre-sales, and I have to admit that this story that you are telling me now, you know, I have been hearing that already for many years, yes. You know. But it is, I believe, you know, in the past 2 years, I have two or three cases from customers, am I talking about ISP, or universities, where they have the first one implemented, who really have requested, you know, to have IPv6 as an access. My question to you is that, you know, you have made a very nice presentation, but when do you expect, you know, to have this stage like you are showing now in this last slide? Is it 1 year, 2 years, or never?
It's a good question. What I expect is, let's see, let's go back a bit. Where were we? Right. What I expect that in the next years, so say up to the point that we actually lose IPv4, most people will be stuck in the first three stages. I don't expect IPv6 to take off before we actually run out. I guess people will need to actually feel some pain before they move to something else. Blue Connect, what am I connected to? I don't have. Which network do I need to connect to here? Yeah, hotel. There's no hotel network that I find here. Right. Well, there's a counter. Unfortunately, I can't show it to you right now. Those things happen. But basically, it will list the dates that currently they look at. This is Jeff Houston's page that I was trying to go for. But basically, 2011 is the date at the moment that will run out of IP addresses. And this might actually be sooner because it does happen that people request a lot of IP addresses currently because they've also looked at the future. So 2011 will hit the wall. And everyone's currently people keep doing the same things they have been doing for the last 10, 15 years. I expect that will run out, and at that point there will be a lot of people going like, oops. I used to work for HP. HP has, of course, 15/8, so they have got their own A class, and they bought Compaq. Compaq had their own B class network, and Compaq bought DECnet before that. They had their own A class, 16/8. So HP currently has got well over 30 million addresses, of which externally they use about none. It's very nice, I guess, as a network admin to work in the offices there. Every office had a /20 of address space from 15/8 somewhere. It's great. They might look at it and go like, oh, we can do something with this. Get your own /24 with this HP switch, maybe, or maybe they're going to do something else. Who knows? There's a lot of people that are sitting on address space that they might use, but not in the way that we actually think of IP address usage. So even when we hit that wall, there's still some time left. For instance, if you look at the light blue bar, the top line, that's actually the amount of address space that has been allocated. The purple line under it, that's the amount of space being announced in BGP. So, well, right, ooh. See, I don't have a pointer, so I guess I'll use my hand. This bit, this difference, that's actually the amount of address space that is just kind of out there, but it's not being announced, so is it in use? We don't know. We do reclamation. IANA, or ICANN, I should say, recently tried to get the X25 address space, so /8. Took them 2 years to contact everyone to get the address space back. And currently, I think we burned through a /8 in 2 months worldwide. So it took them 2 years to get the address space back, and it's gone within 2 months. Now, great. We are going to hit the wall. You will have to look at how you use IP addresses in your networks. You might want to start looking at other solutions. However, if you rebuild your network, look into IPv6. And 2011, I guess, is the year. So that's in 2 years. We're roughly at 700 days, I think, was the last estimate when I looked yesterday. Right. Where were we? Right. Here. Yes. Well, the question is, why do you need to be in LAR to get IPv6 currently? I'm going to give a fairly silly answer, because that's the policy. And I have no other answer. Why don't we have provider independent address space in IPv6? I mean, every other RAR has that. Every other region has got a policy for that. And we don't. The current status of the policy proposal is that the author needs to waiting for a decision from author is the actual status of the proposal. Yes. And I agree. And most people actually agree. Which means that in a few weeks, probably somewhere in February, the status of the proposal will go to review, most likely. And if you agree with it, and actually most people do, let your voice be heard in the Address Policy Working Group. Either go to the mailing list. If you go to ripe.net, you'll be able to go to the mailing list, or come to a ripe meeting. The next ripe meeting is in May in Amsterdam. If you go to Amsterdam, May is actually a pretty good time. And you're all very welcome to come. And say that you approve of this policy. It might actually be through before the ripe meeting already. So mailing list is probably the place to go. And say that you approve of the policy for PI. One of the reasons why it took us so long is because there was something else going on with PI, address space. Going to come to that in just a second. Let's not go through all of this animation. Let's just go straight here. Talking about policy, every region has got its policy, and in some cases you have a global policy which comes from the bottom. In every region, they discuss the policy. If it's a global policy, like for instance how IANA allocates address space or AS number blocks to the RARs, if it's followed, if the policy process is followed in all of the regions, the ASO, the address support organization, and the NRO number resource organization, they basically just check if it's done, and then that's part of the ICANN processes. Now, we have this change, direct end user assignment changes. It will become much, much, much more important to be able to say this person is using this address space. Right now, if you want address space, you go to your friendly local RAR and you say, can I get, I don't know, a slash 17. We look, yes, you need it, you get it. That will stop in a few years. So then what are you going to do? If you say, this is my address space, and someone else says, this is my address space, and it's the same address space, you're going to get a problem. So it's much more important to actually know who is using which address space. And this is part of this. Right now, we require for every PI, provider independent address space holder, to have a contract either with the RIPE NCC or with an LAR, with one of our members. This is a change. You, as an LAR, will be charged in the charging scheme based on the amount of provider independent space that you have given either to your own organization or to others. Seeing as you now also need a contract, that also means you have an option to make money. So it's not that you're going to be paying a whole lot more. But in the charging scheme, the scoring algorithm that we have, things have changed. PI is in there. It's no longer a one-time score. It will come back again and again and again. Yes? What about already allocated PI address space? Yes, it will come in your score. Now, I'm going to talk about the options that you have and that end users have. But basically, if you have given out PI address space in the past to people, you are going to get a score for that. You're going to get points. Now, of course, what we have a scoring algorithm, and we just say, okay, well, the top 5% is extra large, and under that percentage is large, and so on and so forth. And everyone will get a higher score because of this. So this doesn't mean you actually change from one category to another. However, if you've given out a lot of PI address space, it might mean that you go to a higher category, meaning you might have to pay a higher fee. Now, if that happens, of course, it means that you actually need to go to these customers if you don't have a contract with them anymore. So you need to renew these contracts because things have changed. So the contracts will have to change. If you no longer have contact with the customer that you gave address space to 5 years ago, well, there's a few options. You can say, I no longer know about this address space. This has nothing to do with me. I don't want this to be part of my score. At which point, we'll go to the end user and say, well, what do you want to do now? I would actually urge you to not say that, because what you're doing, you're missing an opportunity to make money. Because you need to get a new contract with these people. If you need a new contract, probably you have some recurring fee. You can say every year we will get a score for this, so we need a recurring fee from you. That's what I would say anyways. Now, what does the end user have as options? Basically, the end user right now has the option they can renew the contract that they had with you. One option. Probably the most common option. If you say, sorry, I don't want anything to do with you anymore, I don't care about this address space, it's not going to be part of my score, I don't want a new contract with you, I don't want your money, great. What does the end user need to do? Well, they can go to a new LAR, to someone else, and get a contract with them. If they don't want to do that, or they can't find anyone, they can get a direct contract with us. They can get an end user contract with the RIPE NCC. The fees for that are probably going to be exactly the same as an LAR fee. Just get less for it. So probably most people don't want to do that. They can become an LAR themselves, of course. That's a possibility as well. Or they can return the address space. If they say, all this hassle, I don't want recurring fees, I'm going to give the address space back. Those are the options. And this was one of the things that also stopped the IPv6 PI policy. Because they said, okay, this policy has been a long time coming. And they said, okay, let's not change PI until we have got this in place. So if you've given out PI address space, you need to go to the people that you gave it to. You need to talk to them again. Things have changed. This also means that now that this is out of the way, we can actually make some changes to the PI policy, and the PI policy for IPv6 is one of those.
Where can I check, for example, which PI allocation are assigned to my layer?
That's actually fairly straightforward. If you want to figure out what we have got registered as PI that you have given out as an LAR, go to the LAR portal. If you remember, you probably have an LAR portal account. If you don't, you can set that up. Just go to the right website. One of the options on the first page you'll see is LAR portal. And this is where you can find out all the information that we have on your company, including the address space that has been handed out to you, IPv4, IPv6, PI, AS numbers, things like that. So the LAR portal is where you can find it out. If you're interested in your score, if you've gotten the invoice from us in October, I guess that we sent those out, then it will have the scoring that you have. And on our site, you can find out what the cutoffs are. So which score means that you're extra large, which score means that you're large. All those things you can find on the website. So that is the big change with PI address space. And that also means that now we can go forward with the PI for IPv6. And hopefully, it will mean that a lot of extra people can actually start doing IPv6 that currently say, well, we don't want to become an LAR. And at the moment, the only way to get address space is to be an LAR, because that's what the policy says. So we're going to get different policy, new policy. By the way, how many of you are subscribed to the address policy mailing list? Right. Thank you. First. And I can also understand, because it's part of my job, but I still don't like reading all these mailing lists. You know, some of the mailing lists actually are fun, but the address policy tends not to be one of those. And you have a day job, you know, you need to do other stuff. There is a solution to not being on all those mailing lists, and the solution is to subscribe to another mailing list. This sounds a bit weird. We have a policy announce mailing list. What is the policy announce mailing list? The policy announce mailing list is a mailing list to which we send emails if someone proposes a new policy or if a new policy has been accepted. If you subscribe to this mailing list, and last year it had about 40 emails in the whole year. So if you can take one more email per week, subscribe to this mailing list, because then you'll know if there's a new policy, such as the change for PI, or you'll know when there is IPv6 PI. Policy announce mailing list, it's actually probably the most important mailing list we have. One email per week, and you'll know what people are talking about. If it has direct impact on your business, you can join the discussions if you want. You can still ignore it, that's fine too, but at least you will know what people are talking about. That's fairly important, because in the coming years, policies will change drastically. The moment that we have less and less address space, the policy will be stricter and stricter. So it will be harder and harder to get the addresses. So, policy announce mailing list.
Hey. Jeszcze raz, raz. Raz, dwa, raz, 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 raz. Jeden, dwa, raz, jeden.
Is this a version of test, test? Or what is he saying?
Dzień dobry, raz, dwa, trzy.
Probably, yes. It's working.
Raz, dwa, raz, raz, jeden. Jeden, dwa. Raz, 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 jeden, dwa, trzy, raz.
I'll speak really loudly.
It's true.
Okay, well,
z mikrofonami może zrobimy, prawda?
I guess someone just went out and they'll try and get him to be quiet.
Hey, hey.
They have coffee too.
Mówimy, dobra.
That's just not fair. Okay, now. I guess this is a sign that we want to stop talking about policy, so let's talk about something else. New and improved AS numbers. Right? You may or may not know that there's a policy for getting AS numbers. Well, the policy is actually pretty simple. If you have address space, you want to do multi-homing, and then you can get one AS number per network. Great. You send it in. Tell us which organization is going to use that. We need the company registration documents for the company that is going to use the AS numbers. And that's about it. Now, the interesting policy is actually this one. On the 1st of January 2008, so a little over a year ago, well, the 2nd of January, because the 1st of January, we don't really do too much, not too much work-related anyways. So the 2nd of January, we gave out the first 32-bit AS number. We were going to run out of AS numbers, and they said, you know what, let's come up with something new, and 32-bit AS numbers. Luckily, 32-bit AS numbers are kind of backward compatible. You can keep using 16-bit AS numbers and talk to someone that has a 32-bit AS number. It's great. It's as if they've learned something from IPv6, I guess. So the 1st of January of 2008, we handed out the first 32-bit AS number. Right now, and yesterday, there was an email about new request forms. Right now, if you request an AS number, you're going to get a 32-bit AS number by default. If your routers cannot handle 32-bit AS numbers yet, you can still request a 16-bit AS number. That's the change in the form. In the request form, you can request a 16-bit AS number. It would be a good idea to look if your routers can handle 32-bit AS numbers. Next year, 2010, whatever AS number we have, that's what you're going to get. If it's 32-bit, you're going to get a 32-bit AS number, or your customer that you request the AS number for. This is what the policy says. So right now, by default, we hand out 32-bit AS numbers, unless you specifically request a 16-bit AS number. Next year, you can't, well, you can still request it, but tough luck. You're going to get whatever we have. This might be a 16-bit AS number, because we do take AS numbers back, and we quarantine them for a while, and if they're no longer in use, then we're going to hand them out again. But you cannot request a particular type of AS number. You're going to get what you're going to get, and that's it. So make sure that you've got a plan to update the firmware on all your routers so that they can handle 32-bit, and look at the new requirements of the new firmware and see if you need more memory. I guess the Juniper and Cisco people really don't mind all this, because they can sell more stuff, like that can handle all the new IPv6 prefixes, and that can handle 32-bit AS numbers. They can sell you more memory. It's great. Just know, right now, do it. How many of you have actually updated your routers so that they can handle 32-bit AS numbers? Okay, then the rest of you probably know what you're going to do this weekend. You You can't. Okay. Well, this year you can still request 16-bit AS numbers. And one of the reasons that you could that you can use, our hardware simply cannot handle 32-bit AS numbers yet. So the vendor has 1 year. Otherwise, I guess you need different hardware or not take any new peers. Okay. So, yes. The way it's done is the 32-bit AS number is actually in the extra information. What you get in the normal AS path is the magic AS number. I think it's 23456. Right. And so this is what you'll see in the AS path for each 32-bit AS number. So it will work on a 16-bit on a machine that only understands 16-bit AS numbers. And the extra information is transitive, so it gets sent along. If your machine knows about 32-bit AS numbers, it will basically just substitute the 2345 AS number with the real large AS number in the AS path. So what happens is that as long as you don't have a 32-bit AS number and your peers do not have a 32-bit AS number, everything will work as per normal. No changes needed. The moment that you want to peer with someone that has a 32-bit AS number, or you're setting up a new network and you have a 32-bit AS number, then your hardware needs to be able to handle it. So it's a fairly smooth process in that sense. Nothing will change. There are 32-bit AS numbers active today, and you can still reach it. Okay. Any other questions about 32-bit AS numbers? Talk to the people that sell you the hardware. Yesterday we checked Juniper. The Junipers can handle it. Does anyone know about the Ciscos? Is there firmware available now that actually works with the... Yes? That's okay. Okay. So at least this year, because... Okay. So yes, this is a good reason to still request the 16-bit AS numbers, and this year you still can. So that's good to know. Now the last bit that I have in here, it's actually a shame that I don't have connectivity. Because really the way to show you is by actually showing you just what it is. Routing Information Service, RIS for short. If you go to RIS.RIPE.net, you will have the option to put in a prefix of yours or even just an IP address or your AS number, and it will give you some information. What kind of information? Well, RIS is actually... How many of you are familiar with RIS, with the Routing Information Service that we have? Okay, not everyone. Then I'll quickly explain what it is. If you're familiar with looking glasses, you're familiar with what the RIS is. With one slight difference, a looking glass is like a goldfish. It has no memory. Basically, it will only show you what's happening at that particular point. Now, if you come in on Monday morning, a bit sleepy, and you get an email from a customer, what happened last weekend was really weird. I don't know what's going on. A looking glass won't help you. The RIS actually logs every change to the BGP. So basically, it's a number of root collectors, and they log everything that they see any update to BGP, and you can actually sort through the information of the last 3 months. The system isn't as quick as we'd like it to be. It's about 700 gigs of data in a MySQL database. The machine is kind of screaming. We're working hard at making it respond faster. And we're also working hard at adding features. I would say go to risk.ripe.net and see what comes up. There's a dashboard where basically you just give in your AS number, and you'll get some information about it. One of the other things is that is there is BG Play. What is BG Play? BG Play is a graphical version of this information. And let's see if I can find... Let's see what happens if I move this here. It might be a bit silly, but basically this is a little movie which is information for BG Play. This is the well-known situation that Pakistan said, you need to block YouTube, and someone made a mistake and started announcing a more specific of YouTube's address space. Now what this shows is Pakistan Telecom and how that prefix actually spread throughout the internet. All the blue numbers are AS numbers that we peer with at our root collectors, and BG Play shows you the path for a particular prefix. Now here you can just see it spreading. When it is bold, it's basically a new path. But sometimes you will see the path actually change, and these are root flaps. So if something weird happens to any of your prefixes, you can look it up. You can say, I want this specific time interval, and I want to see what happens. You will see all the root flaps, so you can see if something went wrong at your place, or at some of your upstreams, or even a bit beyond that. In this case, basically, you just see that more and more people went into some black hole when they tried to see little movies of fluffy kittens and what else is on YouTube. And you will see at some point that YouTube starts announcing the more specific as well, simply because they couldn't get in contact with the people at Pakistan Telecom or their upstream to actually adjust the prefixes that they were announcing or their filters. How many of you actually filter what comes in from your peers? Okay, not everyone. Most of you do, which is actually good, because if the upstream for Pakistan Telecom had actually filtered, none of this would have happened. BGP is vulnerable to this kind of things. You need to filter what you accept from your peers, not necessarily what comes from further down, but your direct peers filter that. You can see some root flaps here, and at this point YouTube's starting to announce actually that more specific, and you can see all the roots flapping back. Now this is an example, of course, of that particular incident, but you can do this with your own prefixes. For any time frame within the last 3 months, you can say, okay, I want to see what happens at that particular point. There's more. We'll show you the number of prefixes that you have, the average path length to the root, the different root collectors, all of that. Oh, I wanted to go here. Where can you peer with the RIS? Well, we've got 15 root collectors, and of course this color really doesn't work on a projector, but you can see in Europe we're pretty well placed. From all of these places, of course, you can check what's happening to your prefixes. The RIS dashboard will also show you if there's been anyone that actually announced part of your prefixes, or a larger block that includes your prefixes. There's the MyASN service, which is basically a service that you can set up that if anyone announces your address space from some other AS, or if your address space is announced through people that you don't peer with, you will immediately get an email or a syslog message And we're trying to expand this service into SMSs and things like that. If YouTube had used it, they would have immediately, the moment that the prefix came up, gotten a message, this is happening, and they could have immediately taken action. It's all free. It's there. It's one of the services that we do. So basically, I would say, go there and use this system if you want. Or have a look, and it might be quite useful what you find. If you look at the way we present this information to you and you don't like it, or you want to see it in a different way, tell us. We're changing these services a lot currently because we're trying to get the responsiveness better. So we're just looking at the system as a whole. And any remarks that you have are very, very welcome. As I said, the last 3 months are online. If you want more data, great. We go back to 99. You can get all of that data if you want. Be prepared to come with a really big USB stick. Well, that's pretty much it. Yes? Right. Okay. Certification. One of the projects that we currently have in the RIPE NCC, and there's also a policy that's being discussed for that, is certification. What is certification? Well, for those of you that filter, what do you base your filters on? Do you base this on what's in the RIPE database? How many of you create the filters based on the RIPE database? Okay, this is less than the people that actually filter. So you probably also have other sources, or you just talk to your peers and say, okay, this is what we'll accept from you. What we're thinking of, we need better information on who has got basically the right to announce which address space. And this is where the certification comes in. What we're making is a system where we basically set up a PKI, we've got a certificate, we issue a certificate for the address space to you saying this is your address space. Now, of course, on the router side, they might use this for secure BGP, but we're not really involved with that too much because the first thing we want to do is to actually be able to set this up. What the system will allow you to do is then create a certificate from your point, from your part, saying this is a root authentication, basically, where you say, I will allow this AS number to announce this address space. That's another certificate that you issue, and you can issue that to any AS that you want to issue it to. Basically, what we're creating is a PKI that says this person has the right to use these particular resources. The idea is that with that, it's a much better system to actually say, okay, yes, indeed, this person can use this address space. Basically, bypassing the entire issue of, can I trust that this person actually has the right to use this address space? And we've got currently a beta set up, which you can take part in. Just search for certification on the right website. There's a beta program at the RIPE meeting. You will be able to actually see more of what's going on. You're all invited to take part in this beta program, which basically is a way that we will certify the resources that you have, and you will be able to create certificates for particular ASs to say, yes, you can route this address space. Now, once the routers come in and start actually checking this and start checking this in the PKI, then you'll have a much more secure BGP, and stuff that, like what happened with YouTube, won't be able to happen at that point. Of course, the control that we have, we are not the routing police. We can only go so far as to say, okay, this is what we say is going on. This is the person that is the holder of this address space or the holder of this AS number. What you choose to do with your routers based on that is actually up to you. So from our part, we're doing what we can to make sure that any dispute about address space can be settled by saying, yes, this is the rightful holder of this address space. And this is also what's going to be much more important, of course, when we run out of address space. Currently, there's a dispute about address space. Someone says, this is my /20. Someone else says, no, it's my /20. One of the two will basically just go and get a new /20. End of problem. In a few years, that won't be possible anymore. So indeed, the certificates are there. There's a beta program. If you're interested, join it. Otherwise, come to the right meeting and you can hear a lot more about where we're going with this and what we're doing. The system that we're setting up is based, of course, on input from the community. So if you feel that we should work together with IETF and the router vendors more to make it possible that you can use this for secure BGP, tell us. Because if not, we will just set up our system. If they choose to use it, fine. But we don't specifically go out of our way to make that easier for them. It's still possible because it's simply, it's a PKI, it's a certificate system. But we don't specifically go for that use scenario. The scenario that we're going for is specifying, yes, this person has the right to root this. It's a little bit like what you have in the routing registry currently in the database, with the autonym objects, the root objects, and the inetnum objects in the database. But then with certificates digitally signed and with a path that you can follow all the way up. Does that answer your question? Yes. Okay. Any other questions? Well, if not now, then go to the website or send me an email, and of course I'll be here all day. Yes? Right. What is the role of RIPE? Now, I assume you actually mean the RIPE NCC, the company, as opposed to the community. That's a good question. How do you currently... there is no policy that allows the selling of address space right now. Besides, selling is going to be very hard anyways because you don't own the address space. Basically, you are the rights holder, and basically all we say is this address space is uniquely assigned or allocated to you. This doesn't mean that anyone else cannot use the exact same address space if they choose to do so. Luckily, because the system is there and you can all check it, you can then filter out the other people. But what will be our role? Well, especially with the certificates, how do you currently figure out who is the particular owner of a house? There's basically an office that you go to and check who actually owns this particular piece of ground or this particular house. It's going to be very similar. Of course, all the other roles that we have will remain. So the DNS root server, making sure the Whois database is there, having the RIS, the information, that will not change. But as far as IPv4 goes, our role will probably become, and I'm saying probably because we don't know, the place where you can check, does any particular person indeed have the right to give you this address space. There's currently no policy that will make that easy, but this is being discussed. So on what grounds can you get address space? The current thinking is, we are there, we have a check to make sure that you need the addresses. Just as today, there's a check if you need the addresses, and basically we will just make it easier than for one entity to transfer address space to another. So we'll kind of be there in the middle
to make sure that everyone is still following the rules that there are and that everything is registered correctly, because that's going to be the main part of it. You need to know who has the right to route particular IP addresses. And that was what our role is going to be, the way it currently looks. Okay. Any other questions? Then thanks a lot, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the day.